Okay, guys. So we were at the very top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, and the Mishnah had said, "Shel Beit Nemer Hayumal Kitin Ota Im Hachevel V'Noten Peah Mikol Oman V'Uman." The people of Beit Nemer, they would reap their fields along a rope, and they would give a peah on every row. So now the Gemara says, "Tani Abashal Omer Maskirin Otan Lignai." The rabbis would mention them for disgrace. Now, this is a phenomenon we find in Yoma as well, where when the rabbis are okay with something, so they are maskir l'shevach, zecher tzadik livracha, when they don't like it, so shem rasham yirkav. This doesn't seem to be that harsh. But there were certain things, maskirin to l'shevach, and there are other things that they were happy about, and they would praise them for. Maskirin to l'gnai, what did they do wrong? They would only give 1/100th of the crop instead of 1/60th of the crop. But they would praise them. That they would reap their fields along a rope and give peah at the edge of every row, which meant that the poor would have the advantage of collecting immediately. When they were, even when they were in the middle of the process. Now, there's a slight nuance here as to whether these are two different things or one thing. So, for example, the Mara Fulda says that these are two completely different points, right? One is they gave too little payout, point one, and that was bad. And two is that they did it at the corner of each field, and that was, or each row rather, and not at the corner of the field, right? And that was good. The Rosh Tzurilio, the Riv Matz seem to say that it was a single practice that had good and bad aspects of it. Whereas the Rosh Tzurilio here says, "Datznan lo yivchad." Right, sounds like they had 100 amot that they measured, and they left the last one. So it was specifically because of the way they measured that they ended up with 1/100th and not 1/60th, and therefore there was an aspect of it that was good and an aspect of it that was bad. But fundamentally, there isn't much difference between these. So. Right, so again, what this essentially did is that it divided the field into for at least for the purposes of peah into many mini fields. Actually, just before we do that, it's just worth noting that on we mentioned briefly on Lamed Vav that there was a machloket as to what Beit Nimer was this a family or these people on Eiver HaYarden? Now, if it was people in Eiver HaYarden, so it's possible that the reason that they felt justified in giving less and giving 1/100th is that they felt that that peah wasn't of the same level. Okay, anyway, so returning to the practice of the people of Beit Nemer, so they would give at the corner of each row. Now, what exactly is going on conceptually depends on what you think the purpose of putting it at the corner is, and this seems to be Machloket, Rashi, and Rambam, where Rashi focuses on the end of the harvest, where Rambam really focused on the geographic point that it's in the corner. So now the Gemara moves on to the question of why is it that we tell you to put to do peah specifically at the corner. So Tani b'shem Rabbi Shimon b'pnei chamisha dvarim lo yiten adam peah el b'sof sadehu. There are five rationales for why you put the peah in the corner. One is mipnei gezel aniyim. One is because you don't want to steal from the poor, meaning they wouldn't know where it is, they wouldn't come to get it, and then you get to keep it. Mipnei bitul aniyim. And the second is that it would cause the poor, well, we'll see the exact, but not to not be able to work properly. Mipnei ramayim, because of cheaters. Mipnei marad ayin, and because of the appearance of wrongdoing, which let's just go through these. Mishum shamra Torah lo techaleh patzadecha, and then because of the pasuk, which says that you can't finish the edge of your field. So, mipnei gezel aniyim, In what way does it steal from the poor? Ketzad shleir adam et ashah pinuya. V'yomer l'krovani bovit tolach et ha-peya. Because if you don't have to do it in the corner, so what you would basically do is leave it in the middle and say, okay, I'm leaving it right now. I have a poor relative. Come. Take it, and that's essentially, quote-unquote, stealing. Because that poor person has no more right to it than anybody else. The Orzarua, however, thinks that it's only a problem. It's only considered gezel where you tell your relative to take all of it, not where you encourage him to come at a time when he can get a good portion of it. But whatever exactly the nuance is, so then the Gemara says, "Umipnei bitul aniyim." What's the problem of bitul aniyim? Ketzad shloi aniyim yoshvin umisharmen kol yom vaomrim achshav noten peya achshav noten peya. You don't want the poor people that have to sit there all day by your field and saying, "He's going to give it now. He's going to give it now. He's going to give it now." Yelchu v'yikudu b'sad echer v'yavu b'shad gilui. They'll have the opportunity to go. They'll do work elsewhere. They'll collect peya elsewhere. And then they'll come to your field. They'll be able to know because they'll see, right? It's at the corner. Now, this also relates to the things that we saw on the previous daf, that there is a specific time. Right? So this, you know, the geographic point also helps that, but obviously doing it at specific times is also helpful. An alternative problem here with the time issue is not just that they won't know when to come, is that they're going to spend time looking for the peya. Right? They're going to spend time looking for the peya itself, and that's the waste of time that we're worried about. There may be differences between those two approaches. Number three is umepnei haramaim, because of cheaters. Ketzad, what does that mean? Shlo yomar kvar natati v'hi borer et hayofe umotzi et hara. That either he'll pretend he already gave it and he didn't, or perhaps he'll take the better for himself and leave the worse for the poor, right? And if he could leave it wherever he wanted to rather than in the corner, that makes it much easier. Because he could just say, right, obviously now when he leaves in the corner, so if the worst in the corner, okay, fine. But if he could leave it wherever he wants, he's going to look for the worst part of it. And that's what he's going to leave for the poor person. Umepnei maran ayin, what's the problem of maran ayin? Ketzad shlo yovrim v'shavim omrim ruheach katzar yishploni sadeh v'loniach pe'al aniyim. People will come by and they'll say, oh, look, he didn't give pay-up. Now, it is worth noting that Ramosha Feinstein argues that terminologically there's a difference between maran ayin and chshat. Marat ayin is where you do something that will make people think you're doing something osur and will lead to them possibly. Is where you do something that might look osur, but people will think that what you're doing is mutter and come to mimic it, but in the osur way. Achshad is where someone spiritually thinks that you did something wrong and that's wrong, right? I'll clarify that. Someone thinks you did something wrong, and therefore they think less of you spiritually, and that's a problem because v'yitem nikim Hashem Yisrael, you're supposed to present yourself as clean both to God and to man. Here, Marat Ayin is presented in the Yerushalmi more the way that Ramosha Feinstein determines chshad, and the truth is that in many places these terms do seem to be overlapping, even if the two concepts are in fact distinct. I've argued that that both of these categories have to be seriously and analyzed in different ways, and I have two chapters on this in my book on this with the advent of social media and the like, where we're constantly being exposed to everything we do is exposed to the entire world, and we're seeing things from other people that can easily be taken out of context because there is no context whatsoever. So these are just, you know, these are important categories to keep in mind and to think about their implications. But anyways, that is number four. Now, this is fascinating because the last one makes it sound like, well, it's a pasuk, so what do you need the first four? So either these are tameh mitzvot, they're giving the rationale, of the mitzvah. Alternatively, this is it's more than just the rationale for the mitzvah, but in this case, the rationale integrates into the mitzvah itself. Now, either you just say peah is unique. Alternatively, what many of the mefarshim suggest is maybe because it's Reb Shimon talking, and the Gemara in general assumes that there's a machloket of darshin and time of the Kra, in darshin and time of the Kra, whether the philosophical rationale for a mitzvah affects its practical implementation or not. The Chachamim rule not. Rabbi Shimon thinks yes. And if that's the case, so the fact that Rabbi Shimon is the author here may be that he thinks that these are the philosophical reasons, but philosophical reasons have a practical halachic import. And therefore, for him, it is, in fact, halachically and not just philosophically important that these rationales exist. This is suggested by Moshe Feinstein and others. Alternatively, you could say that we would have said, right, it would have been sufficient to have these reasons, even if we didn't have a pasuk. Matov, that we also have a pasuk. The Rosh Tzurilio suggests a different interpretation, which is that. As we mentioned, there's different ways to understand the peah is at the end in time of your harvesting or at the actual physical corner. And maybe the tam here helps understand what the drasha is and pushes us more in the geographic direction. Because, and then he gives examples of where we have a similar phenomenon. The Gra has yet another perush. He says, He says, right here, okay, it's it's both. I mean, that's not a problem. Right, meaning he's just saying these are five reasons. It's not saying that the real reason is in the pasuk. They're all true. Okay. Anyways, halacha dalet. So halacha dalet says nachri shekatzar tzeduv achar kach nitgayer. If you have a non-Jew who cut the field, reaped the field, and then converted before he'd removed the sheaves and put them in the central pile, patra min aleket o min ashecha o min apeah. He's exempt. Right, so leket, as we've talked about, are the sheaves that fall out of the farmer's hand while he's harvesting. Shechicha can refer to one of two things: either shechat kama, which is you forget things that are standing, or shechat omer, where you forget the already cut sheaves. Peya obviously is the topic of our mesechta. And why is this? Shein shechicha el bishat imor, because the chiyuv takes effect. At that moment when you're putting it in the main pile, and at that point, right. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev b'shecha. Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayev in shechcha because he says shechcha, you're only chayev at that last stage, at the shot of imor, when you're moving it to the pile. And therefore, while peah and the like is, during the harvest is when the chiyuv should have taken effect, but it didn't because he wasn't Jewish. When it comes to shechcha, the actual moment of chiyuv is when he moves it to the main pile, and therefore he's already a Jew at that moment. Okay, so then the Gemara says, "Yod, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, my time of the Rabbanan, Rabbi Yehuda has a good svara." So, what is the reason for the Rabbanan? So the Gemara says, "Rabbi Yosi b'shem Rav, or b'shem Rav Chizkiya bar Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda b'shem Shmuel, aktiv, because it says in the context of shechacha v'shechachta omer." You forgot the sheev, zu shechachat omer. That's because of shechachat with a sheev. Baso de, in the field, zu shechachat kama. That is the case of shechachat of the standing grain. So you see that you have this duality. But what does that teach us? Eche yesh lo shechachat kama, yesh lo shechachat omerin. The two types of shechachat are connected conceptually and halachically. So etche in lo shechachat kama, in lo shechachat omrin. So if you wouldn't have been chayev in the first one, you won't be chayev in the second one. Yehuda thinks the two types of shechachas are separate, and therefore You're chayav in the shichat omerin because he was Jewish then, and the chachamim say no, it's not true. They are linked, and therefore, if you weren't chayav in one, so that shows you're already exempt from shichicha. And then Minchat Chinuch, in a very classic Minchat Chinuch question, asked whether the same thing would be true of a child, or whether it's only by a non-Jew, because non-right meaning a child who grows up and becomes bar mitzvah at this point, or whether a non-Jew is different because he's completely excluded from the mitzvah in a way that a non-Jew is the katan is not as excluded as the non-Jew. The Mishnah Rishona gives two reasons as to why Rabbi Yehuda does not equate shichat omrin and shichat kama. One is perhaps you can only have a hekesh between things that are explicit in the Torah, and shichat kama is only implied, and therefore they can't be fully linked in that way. The other is perhaps he holds that you can only apply a hekesh when you have a mesura, and he didn't have a mesura for this, and perhaps the chachamim did. The Gemara then continues, Yisrael v'gai she yishutafin b'kama, what do you have a Jew and a non-Jew who are partners? Chelko she Yisrael chayav, the half of the Jews is obligated, chelko she goy pater, and that of the goy is pater, and I'm not going to get into this because we discussed it earlier in the Masechet, the different ways of conceptualizing partnership. Ruchizkiya says that the question of whether the Jews Achelek is chayev is in fact subject to a machloket. Now the Gra and the Rosh Cirilio have a slightly different interpretation, and they say no. Everyone agrees that what the Jew left is chayev in peah. The question is, it's so chayev in peah, and we hold brera retroactive clarification that not only is it chayev in peah, but as we saw, there's two aspects to peah. The one is that it's pay on it goes to the poor. The other is that it is therefore exempt from Trumot and Maestro. So the Gra says what's going on here is that maybe it is Chayev, according to everyone, in Peah, but the question is it as if it was Peah always, and therefore it's also Pater from Trumot and Maestro, or is this weird middle category where you have to look at it as both Peah, but you have to also give Trumot and Maestro because you didn't know originally which part was going to go to the poor and have the status of Peah. Okay, so now that we turn to Talmud Bet, we have a little bit of a shorter Amud, and we have a new Mishnah again. So here the Mishnah says as follows. Just like we have an exemption for the poor, from Peah, for non-Jew, we have from Hekdesh. So, Hekdesh kama upada kama, if you sanctified and consecrated the grain for the Beit HaMikdash, and then you redeemed it while it was still standing. Chayav, you're chayav in all the matnon aliyim. Amarim, upar, pada amarim. If you made it kodesh and gave it to, and redeemed it while it was already sheaves, chayav, so then it's definitely chayav. Kama, upada amarim. But if you made it kodesh while it was standing and redeemed it after it was sheaves, petura, it is exempt. Because at the key moment it was exempt, and chayeut sebo, and similarly hamakdish perotav ad shelo balon at maser pidaan. If I consecrated my crops before they reached the time at which they would be chayev in meiser, and then I redeemed them before the time of chiyuv meiser, so by time I actually get to the moment at which they should be chayev meiser, they are not kodesh chayovin. I have to give Truman Meister, Mishabolo and Meister Pidan. If I was poed to them after them, if I was only Makdish them, and I was poed to them, and I redeemed them after at the point at which they were Chayev, they would be Chayev. So I'm also Chayev because they already were Chayev. But Hikdish and Anshlo Nigmaru, Vigamaran Agizbar. But if I was Makdish them before they were finished, and then the treasurer of the Beit HaMikdash, he finished the process. So at the moment at which they should become Chayev and Truman Meister, they belong to Kodesh. V'achar kach bedan, then I redeem them. Piturin, shebashat chovatan, hayu piturin. Because at the time at which they should have become Chayev, they were exempt. Now, for simplicity, we're going to assume here that what we mean by the time of Chiyuv is Meruach, is the smoothing out of the pile, and not a third of the growth, at which point it is considered a vegetable and could in theory become chayev. We're just going to go with the simple pshat. We're talking here about meruach. Furthermore, there is a bit of a deal of whether this is really about peya or maybe it's only about shechicha. Again, we're going to assume simple pshat that it is about peya, and we're talking about meiser, and we're talking about meruach for meiser. So let's we'll just assume that. Obviously, it's a little bit more complicated because the full chiyuv of trumot and maeserot come from other things. There also is to be riyat pnei abayit, that it has to go into the house. But for the purpose of exempting the peyah and defining the shad chiyuv for that, so there we talk about meruach, because it is we'll go with the understanding of Tosa Anje Shem, just because that is primary. So we're just going to stick with that. Again, it's a little bit more complex. But again, for simplicity, we'll go with that. Okay, so then the Gemara picks up, and the Gemara says, Lama Tanita Train Zimnin. So this Mishnah appears basically identically in Masechet Chala. So why is that? So Rabbi Yonah, Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, Bishem, Bar Pidaya, Achat Lemeruach, Ve'achat Lishlish. So one of them is talking about the smoothing, and one of them is the third of the growth. Meaning as follows. So one possibility is basically like this. That each Mishnah tells you its own chiddush, which is that if produce belongs to the Beit HaMikdash, either when it becomes a third grown, or that it is at the time of Meruach, it becomes exempt from Trumot and Maestro, because each of them is a Shachiyuv, and Hektish provides an exemption. Right now, these two times of Chiyuv are different, because after a third, so what it means is that it's Chayiv, you can't eat Achilat Keva, but if you wanted to snack, you'd be allowed to, whereas after Meruach, and it reaches the full Chiyuv, you can't even have Achilat Arai, so there is fundamentally a different type of Chiyuv. Now, the logic for this is that even though at some level there's a chiyuv, by the first stage, it's not really chayiv. It's only if I choose to have a full meal, so then I'm chayiv. But it's not fully chayiv, and definitely on the doraita level, that only comes with the second stage, and that's why that is going to be the critical moment, or both of them are critical moments for the exemption from a chumat maisot. And Rabbi Yossi adds that Rabbi Ba v'Chavraya, Rabbi Ba and his colleagues, Chavraya Amri Achat Meiruach v'Achat Li Shlish. One is for the smoothing, and one is for the third. And they didn't say which Mishnah is which. And Rabbi Ba mifaresh bechalal meiruach bepeya Li Shlish. That the Mishnah here is talking about the initial stage, and Chalad's talking about the second stage. And the reason for this logic is as follows, that when we're talking about challah, so you want something that's conceptually similar to the laws of challah, and the challah itself only becomes chayev at a much later stage. And once you do gilgul, so it's chayev and it's tevel, even if you want to have a snack, and therefore it is conceptually more similar to that second stage. Whereas in Peah, it makes more sense that we're talking about the first stage. So even if they are both true, so the conceptually, it makes sense that this is the Mishnah that's talking about a third. And based on this, the Gemara continues, Matnita de Rabbi Akiva. The Mishnah is consistent with the view of Rabbi Akiva. You know what, let's leave this, we'll pick up with this on tomorrow's daf.